I'll have a glass of rum from this dear child here, as I've took such a liking to, and we'll sit down, if you please, and talk square like old shipmates." When I returned with the rum, they were already seated on either side of the captain's breakfast table, Black Dog next to the door, and sitting sideways, so as to have one eye on his old shipmate, and one, I thought, on his retreat. He bade me go and leave the door wide open. "None of your keyholes for me, sonny," he said, and I left them together and retired into the bar. For a long time, though I certainly did my best to listen, I could hear nothing but a low gabbling. But at last the voices began to grow higher, and I could pick up a word or two, mostly oaths, from the captain. "No, no, no, and an end of it," he cried once, and again, "If it comes to swinging, swing all, say I." Then all of a sudden there was a tremendous explosion of oaths and other noises. The chair and table went over in a lump, a clash of steel followed, and then a cry of pain, and the next instant I saw Black Dog in full flight, and the captain hotly pursuing, both with drawn cutlasses, and the former streaming blood from the left shoulder. Just at the door the captain aimed at the fugitive one last tremendous cut, which would certainly have split him to the chine had it not been intercepted by our big signboard of Admiral Benbow. You may see the notch on the lower side of the frame to this day. The blow was the last of the battle. Once out upon the road, Black Dog, in spite of his wound, showed a wonderful clean pair of heels and disappeared over the edge of the hill in half a minute. The captain, for his part, stood staring at the signboard like a bewildered man. Then he passed his hand over his eyes several times, and at last turned back into the house. "Jim," says he, "rum," and as he spoke he reeled a little, and caught himself with one hand against the wall. "Are you hurt?" cried I. "Rum," he repeated. "I must get away from here. Rum! Rum!" I ran to fetch it, but I was quite unsteadied by all that had fallen out, and I broke one glass and fouled the tap, and while I was still getting in my own way I heard a loud fall in the parlor, and, running in, beheld the captain lying full length upon the floor. At the same instant my mother, alarmed by the cries and fighting, came running downstairs to help me. Between us we raised his head. He was breathing very loud and hard, but his eyes were closed and his face a horrible color. "Dear, dearie me," cried my mother, "what a disgrace upon the house, and your poor father sick." In the meantime we had no idea what to do to help the captain, nor any other thought but that he had got his death hurt in the scuffle with the stranger. I got the rum, to be sure, and tried to put it down his throat, but his teeth were tightly shut and his jaws as strong as iron. It was a happy relief for us when the door opened and Dr. Livesey came in, on his visit to my father. "Oh, doctor," we cried, "what shall we do? Where is he wounded?" "Wounded? A fiddlestick's end," said the doctor. "No more wounded than you or I. The man has had a stroke, as I warned him. Now, Mrs. Hawkins, you just run upstairs to your husband and tell him, if possible, nothing about it. For my part, I must do my best to save this fellow's worthless life, and Jim here will get me a basin." When I got back with the basin, the doctor had already ripped up the captain's sleeve and exposed his great sinewy arm. It was tattooed in several places. "Here's luck, a fair wind, and Billy Bones' fancy" were very neatly and clearly executed on the forearm, and up near the shoulder there was a sketch of a gallows and a man hanging from it, done, as I thought, with great spirit. "Prophetic," said the doctor, touching this picture with his finger. "And now, Master Billy Bones, if that be your name, we'll have a look at the color of your blood. Jim," he said, "are you afraid of blood?" "No, sir," said I. "Well then," said he, "you hold the basin," and with that he took his lancet and opened a vein. A great deal of blood was taken before the captain opened his eyes and looked mistily about him. First he recognized the doctor with an unmistakable frown, then his glance fell upon me and he looked relieved. But suddenly his color changed, and he tried to raise himself, crying, "Where's Black Dog?" "There is no Black Dog here," said the doctor, "except what you have on your own back. You have been drinking rum. You have had a stroke, precisely as I told you, and I have just, very much against my own will, dragged you head foremost out of the grave. Now, Mr. Bones—" "That's not my name," he interrupted. "Much as I care," returned the doctor. "It's the name of a buccaneer of my acquaintance, and I can call you by it for the sake of shortness, and what I have to say to you is this. One glass of rum won't kill you, but if you take one, you'll take another, and another, and I stake my wig that if you don't break off short, you'll die. Do you understand that? Die and go to your own place, like the man in the Bible. Come now, make an effort. I'll help you to your bed for once." Between us, with much trouble, we managed to hoist him upstairs and laid him on his bed, where his head fell back on the pillow, as if he were almost fainting. "Now mind you," said the doctor, "I clear my conscience. The name of rum for you is death." And with that he went off to see my father, taking me with him by the arm. "This is nothing," he said, as soon as he had closed the door. "I have drawn blood enough to keep him quiet a while. He should lie for a week where he is. That is the best thing for him and you. But another stroke would settle him."